Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We've been interviewing brand new members of the Democratic Congress, who's in the class of 2006 that has the chance to reshape our country's politics and policies. Our guest for today represents something that may seem a little odd here in New York, a real Kentucky liberal. But John Yarmuth appears to be just that, and he defeated a real Kentucky conservative in Northup. Northup voted with the Bush administration more than 90% of the time. In the last 6 years, from what I've read, Yarmuth comes to Congress from running an alternative newspaper in Louisville called the Louisville Eclectic Observer. His core issues during the campaign seem to place him in the more activist wing of the party, things like a quick withdrawal from Iraq, single-payer national health care, reexamining the surveillance and interrogation programs, and consideration of scrapping entirely No Child Left Behind. Congressman-elect Yarmuth, congratulations on your election, and hello from New York.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
First things first, is your newspaper really the Louisville Eclectic Observer?
Actually, it's the Eccentric Observer.
Eccentric Observer. Well, okay, even more so, eccentric.
That's right.
Might seem to be one of those sensibilities New Yorkers wouldn't expect to find in Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky is a fascinating place, and I think our district, which is Louisville, basically represents a microcosm of the country. We have a very large and active progressive community, as well as a large minority community and a large community. We have evangelicals. We have immigrant population. So we have about everything you can find.
So you are eclectic.
That's right.
Do you consider yourself eccentric?
Oh, not at all. I think people who know me think I'm rather conventional. I mean, I do play golf avidly, for example. So
you'll fit right in Congress?
Apparently.
Did I get your basic political orientation and key issues about right?
I think that's about right. Although more generally, I talked a lot during the campaign about the whole issue of economic security and the threats to the middle class in the country, and you know, so that involved outsourcing, it involved pension protection, it involved not only health care but basic living wages as well. So we talked about the entire gamut of economic security issues as well as the others you mentioned.
One of the things that I've read about you is that you refused to take campaign funding from political action committees run by business, but you did take it from unions' political
right.
action committees. Is that right?
That's correct. Right. Now, I really think that in order for us to deal with the serious problems we have to eliminate the influence of money on the political process. And while some would say that labor money is, or union money is, special interest, I think that right now labor unions are the only institutions in the country standing up for the middle class. So I look at them as not so much special interest as general interest.
So you're saying workers and business owners are not the moral equivalent of each other?
Well, small business owners, and I have been one, and I have the greatest respect for them, and I really don't talk about them as much as I talk about the huge corporate PACs. I mean, the ones who are putting so much money into the system are not, the political system are not the small business owners. They're Exxons and Enrons and the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies, and those huge industries which are really under the last, for the last 10, 12 years, have been directing public policy. That's what I've been most concerned about.
And you advocate new legislation, I understand, to make it easier to unionize. Do I have that right?
Yes, there is a bill that's been introduced in the Congress, I guess, for the last few terms, called the Employee Free Choice Act, which basically does two things. It allows unions to organize just by the filling out of a card, so there's not a subsequent election, which opens the possibility up of a great deal of intimidation of workers. And then it also forces companies to bargain in good faith in a relatively short period of time. That's probably actually the more important portion of the legislation. It forces the companies to bargain for an initial contract so that they can't delay it for several years.
Do you think that this would have broad support now in the incoming Congress?
You know, that's one of the issues we haven't really talked much about in our initial meetings, but I certainly think the conditions would be far, far improved for the passage of that legislation, yes.
You're also for single-payer health insurance. Do you want to see all private insurance abolished in the United States in favor of a Canadian-style system?
Well, my opponent during the campaign tried to trap me into that. I reject the idea that everything that we're dealing with a U.S. versus Canadian system. There are scores of systems throughout the world that some are more effective than others. The German system, for instance, has been very successful in not only providing health care for everybody, but very good outcomes. And so I think we have the opportunity to create something very special in this country that creates a single-payer, privately delivered health care system, and all we need is the will to do it. And I think that the new class of congressmen is very, very interested in pursuing some type of universal health care system.
Nancy Pelosi conspicuously avoided health insurance as a national campaign issue. Do you think the new Congress will take it up seriously anytime soon, or will the Democratic leadership consider it still too politically hot?
Well, they may consider it politically hot, but I know that John Dingell, for instance, who will be chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee, which has a great deal of authority over health care, is very interested in beginning a conversation on universal health care. And he's the dean of the House. He's been there for 50 years, has widespread respect. And I think the conversation will start in the next 2 years. It's going to be a 6 to 10 year process to accomplish anything significant in health care. But we need to start doing it now because it is truly wrecking our economy.
6 to 10 years.
I think it's going to take that long to figure out some alternative delivery system, yes.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue to get to know incoming members of the freshman class of 2006 after the Democratic sweep on Election Day. Congressman-elect John Yarmuth of Louisville, Kentucky, my guest right now on WNYC. Let me go one layer deeper on this, because I know so many of my listeners are so interested in this issue. Your notion, did you say single-payer but privately delivered?
Yes, I don't think anyone, and this is the important distinction that when we get into the rhetoric of talking about health care reform that we often get lost. People talk about socialized medicine and nationalized medicine as if the government's actually going to be taking over choosing who your doctor is and running the hospitals and so forth. And that's not at all what we're talking about. We're talking about a system in which you're still going to be able to choose your doctor. Hospitals are still going to be able to operate. Their pharmaceutical companies will still research and develop new drugs. But we have one institution or one entity paying for all of the reimbursing all of those companies and reducing administrative costs.
So that entity
we now have single payer for almost 50% of the healthcare system anyway through Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans programs. So it's not a stretch to see how this can work to include everyone else in the population.
So that would abolish private insurance companies
it
as
could.
We know it.
It could, but not necessarily. I mean, right now, for instance, Medicare is subcontracting its administration to private insurance companies, including one in my district, Humana. It'll be an interesting test to see if that actually improves outcomes and efficiencies. If it does, then maybe that's a way to help administer a universal program. If it's not, then maybe insurance companies aren't necessary.
So we've talked about a couple of things so far, your position on single-payer health, your position in favor of making it easier to unionize as a core strategy to help the middle class. But we've been hearing a lot about the relative centrism or conservatism of this class of 2006, a lot of Blue Dog Democrats and things like that. Have you been meeting a lot of your new freshman peers?
I've met all of them. And you know, I think that's an interesting notion, and I think it's probably put forward by two things. One is Republicans trying to save face, and secondly, also media trying to pursue a storyline which they think is marketable. But
a divisive storyline.
Exactly. But when I'm talking to my fellow new members, I don't sense there's a centrism at all. It depends on what issues you're talking about. Sure, there are new members who are pro-life, and there are new members who probably wouldn't support gay marriage. But we tend to focus on those issues. But on the two core problems facing this country now, our international situation, the war in Iraq, and on economic security issues, I believe this class is overwhelmingly progressive. And that's why I think there's a kind of a misimpression giving when we talk about more centrist Democrats. They are on certain issues, and they reflect a wide variety of views, but on the core important issues that government has an important role in, and that's the economy and jobs and international affairs, then I think it's a very progressive group.
So you think some consensus is possible around, for example, the kind of single-payer health ideas that you and Congressman Conyers have?
I absolutely do. I think everyone I talk to, virtually everyone in this class, believes that health care is the number one domestic issue that we have to deal with. And there is absolutely no fear of talking about universal health care among the freshman class.
You mentioned national security. On Friday, as you know, Speaker Pelosi chose Sylvester Reyes to be the Intelligence Committee chair. That looks to me like a choice you would like, because he seems aggressive on investigating the president's surveillance and interrogation programs, plus he was against the war from the start. Any impression that you have as an incoming freshman of Reyes or what you think that committee will do?
I don't have any impression of Reyes. It seems to me like a pretty good choice, and I certainly hope that this Congress is going to be aggressive in investigating these intelligence gathering programs, because I know my constituents are concerned about them, and we have to, that's Congress's role. I think it's important, and we have to do that.
Well, the president started the warrantless surveillance program without permission from Congress.
Exactly.
Now it looks like Congress will have a say, but may be likely to endorse it. So if you had a vote up or down on the president's surveillance program, how would you vote? Remember, he says if Al-Qaeda is calling, he thinks it's important that we listen in.
Well, I don't dispute that it's important if Al-Qaeda is calling. The question is how many rights of innocent citizens do we trample to make sure that we get those calls? And that's a balance that Congress, I think, is uniquely equipped to strike. I don't have any problem overall with domestic surveillance programs. I think but they can be done within the law. They can be done with suitable accountability. And I don't believe that the administration, whether it's the Bush administration or any other one, should be the sole determinant of what is appropriate surveillance and incursion into individual rights. So, we debated this during the campaign, and at one point I said, this bill allows, this talking about the military tribunals portion of it, and I said, this bill would allow Don Rumsfeld to incarcerate me without my having no recourse at all in the courts, just because he thinks that I'm suspicious.
But you're an American citizen.
But the bill allows you to do that. And she said, my opponent said, that's only one section of the bill. And the point is that there are portions of the bill, of the program, that are perfectly acceptable. I think I could support enthusiastically. But that doesn't mean that there are portions of the program that need to be changed.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we continue this fall to get to know brand new members of the Democratic swept Congress. A few more minutes with Congressman-elect John Yarmuth, Democrat from the Louisville area of Kentucky. One more issue. No Child Left Behind. You've been very outspoken against it. I know you've said it needs to be amended or ended. Do you really want to consider repealing the whole thing?
As it currently stands, I think it's doing far more harm than good. What we've seen in some parts of the country, for instance, is because there's so much emphasis on the testing in terms of rewards and punishment, that schools have actually forced kids out of the system, because instead of working with the problem kids, they get them out of the system because they bring their test score averages down and therefore subject them to the penalties of the provision. So there are all sorts of adverse consequences of No Child Left Behind that I don't think were intended or anticipated, but have happened. So that's why we need to look at a complete overhaul of this program or scrap it. The funding issue is a totally different issue, but one that's important. But I'm more concerned about the educational aspects of it, and again, these probably unintended but very, very serious adverse consequences. And I've sat in a room with a dozen or so educators, everybody from a former Secretary of Education down to a preschool teacher, and every one of them talked about how the problems with No Child Left Behind, not involving funding, but involving just the instructional aspects. And I'm convinced that this is the wrong way to go. We do need accountability of teachers. We do need to worry about outcomes, but the heavy hand of the federal government in this particular area is not something that has been productive.
Can you get away from testing, though? I mean, supporters say there's a very progressive core to No Child Left Behind because it's about counting by race to make sure schools are closing the horrible racial learning gap in this country, which no law has ever really tried to enforce. And they say if you don't believe in standardized tests, but we all know teacher quality varies so much, how else are you going to get accountability to really make education racially equal?
Well, there needs to be some testing. Obviously, Kentucky has a very progressive landmark program called CATS, and it's been in place and has had very significant positive effects. So now we have our own testing system. The federal government's imposed a secondary system, so our students have to take two sets of tests. And a lot of states are in the same bind. They're trying to work very hard at the at accountability in their own areas, but this is just another layer of non-instructional activity that is keeping our kids from learning. And you know, you talk about you talk to teachers and administrators, and what they say is, you have everything focusing now on reading and math. Now, reading and math are important, but when you, for instance, neglect all the arts, when you neglect or avoid all the civics instruction and certain things like that, you're eliminating a huge part of important instructional activity. And so there needs to be a change in the system. If I had any confidence, and there was just an article in the New York Times within the last couple of weeks about how seriously deficient the system has been in terms of improving that racial gap, it's obviously not having the effect that, even though it's a relatively new program, it's not shown any progress yet.
So before you go, you're a freshman in training. You come out of journalism. What has surprised you so far about Washington or the experience of being a congressman-elect?
I've just the other day I realized what it felt like to me. It feels like I've walked into my television set. But I worked on the Hill 30 years ago. I worked on the Senate side, so I have some familiarity with the process, and I have walked the halls before, so it's not a totally new thing to me, and it's not intimidating. But I have not been involved in the nuts and bolts, horse trading over legislation, and which I know that I'll have to get better trained at. But I'll tell you what I have been particularly surprised about is how warm and welcoming the members have been, the current members have been. Of course, we're heroes to them. We put them back in the majority.
Yeah.
But everybody's been very nice. And I tell you what, the other thing that surprised me is how universally the Democrats and the Republicans I've met want to get away from this partisan bickering. Everybody from Speaker to be Pelosi down to the new members, they all say, we don't have time for that.
How do you do that when deep down you seem to feel that the other guys are led by a bunch of right-wing wackos?
Well, you know, if you talk to most of them, they're not that way. And I think what's happened is at least the new members understand they've been sent to Washington for a purpose. They feel that they do have a direction. And I think the Republicans, the ones I've talked to, also sense that the public wants us to stop doing that. So the Republicans have seen what can happen when the public gets really outraged. And I think we all say, you know, we have 20 months or so, 22 months to do what we were sent there to do, which is not to solve all the problems, but to set a new direction. And I think that overwhelming understanding of where the public is on the current political system will resolve some of these ridiculous partisan bickering issues.
So if you were writing a headline for your newspaper, the Louisville Eccentric Observer, on your experience since Election Day, what would it be?
I would say new members cautiously optimistic.
John Yarmuth, Congressman-elect from the Louisville area, Democrat, of course, as the Democrats swept all the open seats or contested seats that changed hands. Thank you very much. Congratulations again, and good luck in the nation's capital.
Thanks, Brian. I look forward to talking with you again. Appreciate it.
And we'll keep interviewing members of the class of 2006 over the next few weeks. And remember, you can subscribe for free to our Brian Lehrer Show daily podcast. Every day we pick one segment from the program to podcast. You can get it for free. Sign up at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening to the Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.